this week. As Israel pounds Gaza with airstrikes, the Middle East braces for a full-scale war. A complete siege of the Gaza Strip is underway. Israel has vowed to decimate Hamas for its unprecedented surprise attack on the Jewish state. Why did Hamas launch this attack, and why now? What are the regional and international ramifications of the fighting? And where do African countries stand on the conflict? Straight Talk Africa starts now.
Hello there and welcome. This is Straight Talk Africa coming to you from VOA's headquarters in Washington. I'm Heidi Adams. Israel continues to hammer the Gaza Strip with the fiercest airstrikes in its 75-year conflict with Palestinians. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says his country's retribution has just begun. Israel is vowing to destroy Hamas after the militant group launched an unprecedented attack on the Jewish state last weekend. The combined Israeli and Palestinian death toll now tops 1,600. U.S. President Joe Biden says the United States, as he put it, has Israel's back and that he would ask Congress to take urgent action to defuse Middle East tensions. But analysts say the possibility that Americans are being held hostage by Hamas complicates the situation. VOA's Anita Powell reports for us from the White House.
President Joe Biden minced no words in describing the shock and horror of Hamas' surprise weekend attack on Israel.
This was an act of sheer evil. More than 1,000 civilians slaughtered, not just killed, slaughtered in Israel. Among them, at least 14 American citizens killed. Parents butchered, using their bodies to try to protect their children. Stomach-turning reports of babies being killed, entire families slain.
And he clarified Washington's stance on Israel's counteroffensive.
We stand with Israel. And we will make sure Israel has what it needs to take care of its citizens, defend itself, and respond to this attack. There's no justification for terrorism. There's no excuse.
To that end, he said the U.S. has sent a strike carrier group to the region. And he says he'll ask Congress, once a new House Speaker is elected, to take urgent action to fund the national security requirements of our critical partners. Analysts say the carnage has touched a raw nerve at the White House, which illuminated itself in Israel's color over the tragedy.
There may be Americans captured by a terrorist group, and that's got to be a priority of any American president. And the second issue is coming to terms with the deaths of Americans in a terrorist attack in Israel. Add to that all the complexities of a very difficult regional situation. And it involves not only Israel and Hamas, but the possibility of Hezbollah and Iranian involvement. So President Biden is trying to wrestle with all these.
VOA asked the White House whether Biden asked Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to exercise restraint in his military response.
Nobody wants to see innocent life taken. As I said, there's been too much of it. One of the great things about our relationship with Israel is that we're two vibrant democracies, and we mutually believe in things like the respect for innocent life and the rule of law. And we're always stronger together, our two countries, when we show that to the world, that we do respect innocent life and that we do respect the not only the rule of law, but the law of war.
U.S. adversaries were quick to point blame.
Unfortunately, we can see a sharp deterioration of the situation in the Middle East. I think that many will agree with me that this is a clear example of a failure of the policy of the United States in the Middle East, which tried to monopolize the resolution, but unfortunately was not concerned with finding compromises acceptable to both sides.
Kirby said conflict in Israel won't take Washington's eye off other threats, wherever they are.
Any nation who might think that somehow the United States is going to get distracted should think again. We are a large enough, big enough, powerful enough country, economically viable enough. In fact, the economy is incredibly strong right now that we can look after our national security interests and those of our allies and partners anywhere around the world.
Nor, Biden said, will he walk away from Israel? Anita Powell, VOA News, the White House.
So why did Hamas launch this attack on Israel, and why now? And there are questions about, although no concrete evidence of, Iran's involvement. Henry Ridgewell reports for us from London.
The Hamas attack on Israel Saturday took most regional powers by surprise, but many analysts say Iran would have approved the assault in advance.
Iran has been for several years supporting Hamas through funding and through training and through military equipment. Decisions to engage in war by these groups like Hezbollah, Hamas, the Islamic Jihad, and others can only happen with explicit prior direct agreement from Iran. But this is very different from saying that Iran ordered these groups to do these attacks.
Iran has described Hamas's actions as the manifestation of resistance, but denied any responsibility. Israel's president, Isaac Herzog, blamed an evil axis whose base is in Iran. Israeli officials say there is no direct evidence that Tehran directed the attack.
This is an operation that was launched by a Palestinian group for its own Palestinian reasons. Hamas is not an operative or a proxy of the Iranian regime. Although there may be convergences of interests.
What interest would Iran have in renewed conflict between Hamas and Israel? Geopolitical alliances are shifting fast. Saudi Arabia and Israel are attempting to normalize diplomatic relations, supported by the United States. The Palestinian Authority, a domestic rival to Hamas, is taking part in the talks.
The deal involves Saudi Arabia talking to the Palestinian Authority. Hamas was not part of this discussion, and therefore Hamas felt, first of all, that it needed to be part of any solution to the Palestine-Israel conflict. And so we're talking about a geopolitical context in which Hamas and also its backer Iran want to set the political agenda.
Meanwhile, Tehran's negotiations with the West over a return to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal and a lifting of sanctions have stalled.
Troublemaking is negotiating by other means. And I believe that this is applicable to this situation. I'm not sure Iran is seeking a larger confrontation. As I said, it's probably seeking attention and seeking basically to convince the big powers involved in the region, particularly the United States, to take Iranian role in the region seriously.
Washington should reassess its Iran policy, argues Khatib.
U.S. foreign policy has focused on Iran's nuclear file and has, in a way, pushed Iran's regional role to the margins. I think there is now no denying that Iran's regional role needs to be central to U.S. policy.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Sunday he had not yet seen direct evidence of Iranian involvement in the Hamas attack. Meanwhile, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said Monday his country's response would change the Middle East. He did not elaborate on what this meant. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
A war that could change the Middle East. Well, as fear of a full-scale war in the region spreads, what will the geopolitical consequences be? How will the fighting between Israel and Hamas affect countries in the region and around the world? And where do African leaders stand on the conflict? My guests this week are Pumlani Majozi. He's an author and a senior fellow at African Liberty based in South Africa. He joins us from Johannesburg. And also with us is Michael Walsh. He's a senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Institute. And he joins us from right here in Washington. Gentlemen, a warm welcome to both of you. And Michael, I'm going to start with you. For people who might not understand the backstory and the backdrop here, why is the United States showing such strong support for Israel?
There's a couple of reasons why. I mean, there's the historical precedent, obviously. You have U.S. individuals who were killed and who are being held hostage in this situation, and that's going to force the hand of any president. But you also have the regional context. I mean, obviously, when the Houthis had sent ballistic missiles raining down on Saudi Arabia and UAE, One of the criticisms that came out on the U.S. government was the failure to respond quickly and resolutely to those situations, which were also, you know, linked not just to the Houthi, but also to the Iranians. And so there is a need to react quickly because you don't want to see a deterioration in the relationship with Israel like we saw with UAE in the aftermath of that event.
Pumlani, we saw governments like Ghana, Kenya and Rwanda come out early on condemning Hamas's attack on Israel last weekend. Kenya expressing support for Israel. Now, the leaders of Uganda, Tanzania and Nigeria appearing a little more cautious, calling for dialogue, calling for an end to hostilities. But the South African government singing a bit of a different tune here, coming out with the following statement. I'm going to read a portion of it here. And it says, South Africa expresses its grave concern over the recent devastating escalation in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The new conflagration has arisen from the continued illegal occupation of Palestine land, continued settlement expansion, desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and Christian holy sites, and ongoing oppression of the Palestinian people. The region is in desperate need of a credible peace process that delivers on the calls of a plethora of previous UN resolutions for a two-state solution and a just and comprehensive peace between Israel and Palestine. That statement, of course, from South Africa's International Relations Department. Pumlani, can you help us understand why South Africa is taking this position?
Thanks, Heidi. It's great to be back on your great show. And one thing to add on that statement is that their ruling party, the African National Congress, that has governed South Africa since democracy began in 1994, has come out in strong support of taking a position of standing on the side of Palestine. In other words, supporting Palestine. But your question is, why this statement? Well, as I've just highlighted, that the ANC, the ruling party, has been governing South Africa since 1994. It emerged to govern South Africa as a liberation movement, and it has seen the conflict between Israel and Palestine as a situation where the people of Palestine are fighting for their, you know, for liberation or for their freedom. So that has been the perspective of the ANC that is currently, you know, leading our government. That has been its perspective over the past decades. Hence, that statement that you read highlights exactly that. That yes, they condemn the violence, but there is this suggestion in that statement that the reason why this violence took place is because Israel is, you know, oppressing them, the people of Palestine. So it's the historical dynamics played here that are playing out, and the ANC has always, in decades, seen the conflict between Israel and Palestine as a situation where the people of Palestine are fighting for their, you know, for their freedoms and for their land, and that shaped that statement then.
Gentlemen, please stay with me. I want to continue this conversation after the break. We're going to continue our discussion as fears of a full-scale war in the Middle East spread. What are the international implications and where do African countries stand on the conflict? We're going to continue that discussion when Straight Talk Africa returns.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus, Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington every week on Healthy Living, right here on VOA.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
With Straight Talk Africa, welcome back. We're discussing the global fallout of the fighting in the Middle East. Israel has vowed to decimate Hamas in response to the militant group's surprise attack on Jewish soil at the weekend. There is also an ongoing hostage situation, even as the Israeli military looks to launch a ground invasion in Gaza. Hamas is holding up to 150 hostages taken during its weekend attack. What are the international implications of what is happening in the Middle East? My guests are Pumlani Majozi. He's an author and senior fellow at African Liberty based in South Africa. He's in Johannesburg. And also with us is Michael Walsh. He's a senior fellow at the Foreign Policy Institute. And he joins us from Washington. Gentlemen, welcome back. I want to go back to you, Michael. The U.S. President Joe Biden saying in no uncertain terms that the U.S. has Israel's back. And as we saw in Anita Powell's report earlier, at this point, he is not really asking Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to show any sort of restraint, at least not publicly, as Israel goes after Hamas. Of course, we're also starting to see the bodies piling up, and we'll see more of those images in coming days. We've seen them in Israel and now in Gaza. As this conflict looks to intensify, is the U.S. likely to draw a red line at some point, somewhere? Or is the approach towards Israel, we're behind you no matter what it takes and how long it takes?
I mean, we're seeing a contestation of conceptualizations happening. I mean, you saw John's statement about vibrant democracy. You have some states in the international system currently focusing on the fact that Israel is viewed as an apartheid state. Other people are focusing on the vibrant democracy. Some people are focusing on calling this a terrorism attack. Other people are focusing on calling this legitimate resistance. So these conceptualizations, these battle over concepts, is happening in the background. And Biden is trying very hard, I would imagine, at this point in time, to try to get more countries to declare this a terrorist attack and to declare Hamas a terrorist group. I mean, when you have a situation where you're having the beheading of people, where you have a situation where you're killing innocent civilians en masse, you know, that crosses a red line from a foreign policy standpoint for the United States, and especially when there's U.S. citizens involved in this and there's allies citizens involved in this. And so I think that Hamas crossed the red line from a U.S. perspective. And crossed it very strongly. And so I think at this point, the focus of the Biden administration is how do you rescue these hostages and how do you seek to dissuade the further expansion of this conflict? And so from a Hamas standpoint, they've created a situation that is sort of the perfect situation for them. I mean, they are trying to find a way to put U.S. soldiers on the ground in Gaza. And having U.S. citizens being held captive is one of the ways you do that. And what they would like to do is have a Mogadishu-like moment in Gaza. And the Biden administration has to figure out a way to not only prevent that from happening, but to rescue these hostages. And that's a very challenging thing for the Biden administration. That's a fine line to walk.
Pumlani, to Michael's points here, and beyond the battleground, the warfare that we see in the Middle East, what's going to happen on the diplomatic front? Will we see African countries be expected, whether implicitly or otherwise, to take sides in this conflict, or at least feel pressure to take sides, as we saw in the case of Russia's war in Ukraine, especially at places like the United Nations General Assembly, when it comes time for resolutions and for countries to vote?
Look, I think there will be pressure, no doubt. That's how the international system tends to operate, where we have you have one group of countries trying to, you know, to impose an influence. So it's going to happen. There will be pressures from African countries. And the question is, how will they react? And as I think, as you may have seen, the AU statement released over this issue, this war that's going on with Israel and Palestine, that they are quite clear that they also lay the blame on Israel, that the Israel must pull out from the occupied Palestinian land. So generally, the position in Africa is that the people of Palestine are fighting for their freedom. That's just the perspective amongst the governing elite. And for sure, those pressures will come. The fundamental question is, are they going to resist and continue to take the path that they have taken over the past years, and even now with this conflict? And my gut feeling is that they are going to persist on their way of doing things, which is to side more with the Palestinian side and see Israel as the perpetrator of human rights abuses. And for me, I'm quite disappointed in that sort of position, because I would argue that at this point, that the goal must be to condemn violence that has been unleashed by Hamas, and also, you know, to over the long term, to argue for a situation where the existence of Israel is recognized in that area, but also, you know, Palestine as well, the two-state solution to be pushed through. So African leaders have tended to be more sort of, you know, resisting to international pressures. We have seen that with the Russia-Ukraine war. We have seen that with previous conflicts as well. And I think even in this instance, they are going to resist those pressures and continue on their path of standing on the side of, in general, on the side of Palestine.
Michael, what's your take on this?
I mean, I think the Biden administration is in a very difficult position. There's a domestic political angle on this within the United States with the upcoming national elections. You have both progressives and conservatives having criticized the Biden foreign policy for the better part of the administration, you know, from the withdrawal in Afghanistan to the current situation that's unfolding to the border wall, you know, being extended. So Biden's facing a lot of domestic political pressure. And this, you know, was a continuation of the Trump strategy. I mean, the expansion of the Abraham Accords beyond, you know, Morocco, Bahrain, and United Arab Emirates, and trying to press for more normalization for Israel, recognition for Israel. A lot of that was supposed to be in Africa. I mean, as you'll recall, Niger was one of the countries, Mauritania, Somalia. You know, Niger is now off the map because of the coup. Mauritania is off the map, seemingly because of this incident in Gaza. Sudan, which was another country they were trying to normalize relationships with, is off the map because of the civil war. You know, so there's a lot going on that extends beyond the Middle East into Africa. So African countries have a lot at stake in this, actually. You know, the what we saw in Armenia and Azerbaijan as an extension of sort of this global instability. You know, there could be even far more instability coming to the African continent in the next year as the U.S. focuses on Ukraine, Russia, and focuses on Palestine and Israel, and potentially, you know, other contingencies. I mean, there's always the concern about Taiwan and China. So as the major powers focus on contesting in these places, that kind of takes off the lid of restraint for other sort of, you know, mid-level powers and minor powers elsewhere in the world to be able to pursue their own agendas and, you know, not look at international law as a restraint anymore and be able to move forward with prosecuting their own activities, whether they're state actors or non-state actors. And I'll say the final thing is, you know, this has an implication not just on the grand strategy of the Biden administration in the Middle East and trying to get recognition for Israel and decoupling the Palestinian issue from the normalization of Israeli relations and trying to move forward with that, it has huge bilateral implications. I mean, we've talked about South Africa. You know, there's nothing that would prevent South Africa from declaring that Hamas committed a terrorist attack and still calling Israel an apartheid state. But that would be a very difficult thing for the Biden administration to prosecute, especially in the aftermath of the Lady R incident. But you have other countries across the continent where now U.S. relations are implicated in this as the U.S. gets involved. So, you know, Algeria is a great example. You know, the U.S. was trying very hard to strengthen its relations with Algeria. You know, that was strained, obviously, with the Morocco-Algerian incident. But this, you know, puts another layer of complication in U.S.-Algerian relations. And this is going to happen across the region. You know, in Morocco, you have minor groups who are coming out strongly in support of Gaza, even though the government is taking a different position. So it puts internal pressure on U.S. partners and allies across the region as well. So there's global implications for what's happening. And I think that's the most important thing to take into consideration, is it's not just affecting the policy of the Biden administration with respect to Israel and normalization. It's going to affect bilateral relations across the world for the U.S. government.
Pumlani, to many of the points there that Michael has made, if you look at U.S.-South Africa relations in particular, they've not been the greatest in recent months over the Russia-Ukraine issue. Could the fighting in the Middle East put these two on a collision course? Yet again, these are two major trading partners, but are they bound to be at loggerheads over this issue in the Middle East as well?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, as Michael has been saying, has highlighted, I think the strong relations between Israel and the USA, they are well known all over the world. They've been in an alliance for a very, very long time. And we have been our government in South Africa has been quite naive to, in many instances, to go on a path of ensuring that there is that provocation with the world's superpower, the United States. So this issue here, it's going to be there will be that friction between the U.S. and South Africa. But I must say, though, that given the frictions that we've had with the United States, the U.S. still has very goodwill towards South Africa, partly because of, you know, Nelson Mandela, our transition to our peaceful or largely peaceful transition to a democracy. So the United States, the world's superpower, has shown a goodwill to South Africa over the years. Even though we've had those blunders within our, how we've done our foreign policy as a nation, but the United States has always been sort of on the line of showing goodwill. So even in this instance as well, for sure here we're going to see that divisiveness or the friction over the Israel Palestine issue. But I still do believe that over the long term, there can be at a basic level some sort of coordination and a way of trying to cooperate with the U.S. So long as, you know, that they don't get frustrated at how we conduct ourselves or our foreign policy, where we basically sort of take those stances that are quite sometimes sort of startling in many ways. But the United States has always been there. But the frictions are definitely going to come through. It's a matter of is the relationship going to survive that friction now, the new one that we are going to see, and it's going to be, we are going to wait and see. But I'm quite positive.
Well, gentlemen, interesting conversation. Thank you so very much for your insights. We will keep our eye on these fast-changing developments. Pumlani Majozi, thank you so much for joining me, and a big thank you to you as well, Michael Walsh. I appreciate your insights and your time. And, of course, that is our show today. Thank you so much for joining us on television, radio, and online. Do follow us on social media for more news and information. You can also go to voaafrica.com. Thank you for always watching and for always listening. From our team here in Washington, we'll see you next time. Goodbye.